Hello, it's Dan Le Batard, and the last time I saw this guy, he was hugging me on Española Way. It was a little bit strange. I was not expecting it, but he is a giant sports fan, and he has an unusual story to tell. You don't usually go from chef to hip-hop, and he's going to tell that story with us now. Action Bronson has taken a real unusual path to get to where he is, and he is admired as a lyricist. He is a vigorous hugger, I can tell you that. I was, again, surprised.
Looks like a good hugger, Dan.
Yeah, he was just very excited to see me because secretly in there is a really giant sports dork. But before we get to that, we've been asking you guys to support.
Out of the way, Dan. Okay. It is ZipRecruiter time.
Watch out.
Oh, man. I come here every damn week and I tell you how challenging hiring is, yet not enough people are listening to me.
Nope.
Okay? So this is full-on threatening Mike now, okay? Uh-oh. You're going to go to ZipRecruiter.com/beach. It's the only place that has powerful matching technology that scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job.
Can you turn that down just a little?
No, I can't. You get the hell out of here.
Whoa.
Shut up. Because as applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one of them and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. And that's what I love so much about ZipRecruiter.com/beach.
But the mood is quieter around here for South Beach Sessions. You're shouting.
You got a rapper on this week. It's time to bring the energy level up. Action Bronson is probably going to be high. Okay, I listened to this. It sets a record for F-words in a South Beach Session.
Really?
It seems irresponsible, but trust me, you'll find out. Dan asked. Anyways, I want all of you that are listening to South Beach Sessions, okay, to go to ZipRecruiter.com/beach. That's B-E-A-C-H. And try ZipRecruiter for free. How hard is that? It's free. Try it out for free. And I always tell you, and you listen to me when I'm telling you, Chris Cody.
I'm listening.
ZipRecruiter.
Yeah.
It's the smartest way to hire.
All right. So on that note, you listened very well, Chris. I salute you for just taking that barrage, that threatening barrage. But listen to what Mike's telling you there. Just go do that for us real quick. It doesn't cost you anything. Literally doesn't cost you anything. And you're supporting what it is that we do around here. And without further ado, no one gets introduced that way anymore. Here is Action Bronson. So this dude's path has been crazy. The journey has been nuts. You do not have the resume that this guy has that goes chef, rapper, and New York Times best-selling author. He tells you how to eat well. He seems to eat well. He does the kind of things with Stone Beyond Belief, his latest book that follows, again, the New York Times bestseller. That's delicious. He's stoned all the time. All the time. Action Bronson, right now, right? All the time. You're always stoned, yes?
Absolutely. You are correct.
And you go to great lengths, right? Like, this is a habit that you're supporting. Can you explain it to us? Can you detail? Because I'm looking at this, and the cover of your book, you're smoking 5 joints.
Yeah, I couldn't get enough. I couldn't get enough in there. So bottom line, it's not really, this is not something that's habit or, no, I don't look at it upon, I don't look at it as something that's wrong. It's just a part of my life. You know what I mean? This is just, this is my way of being.
Forgive me for a second, but what is your real name? How do you pronounce it?
My real name is Ariad.
Okay.
Arslani.
And so what is your backstory? Because I've read about you and the way that you arrived is unusual, but what can you tell us about your early years?
I don't really know what to say about early years. I was a young man growing up in Flushing, Queens, come from a working class family, was always imaginative and curious and ready to do whatever, down for whatever, art in the street, running around 13 years old, all around the city, just wilding out.
What did you want to be?
I'm a simple man.
What did
I
you want?
I don't really remember.
But you don't remember whether you wanted to be a chef, a rapper? You didn't remember what you wanted to be as a kid?
No, of course. When I was young, I always wanted to be a chef. That was all. I wanted to play sports, you know. I wanted to be a baseball player.
How much trouble did you get into?
I got into a moderate amount of trouble. I got into some good trouble, some bad trouble, you know, some trouble that lingered, some trouble that stays around. You know, I like it all. I was always a good boy. Just was always wrong place, wrong time, wrong scene.
Were you a happy kid?
Absolutely. But I went through my patches of 13 being really mean also. You know, when you're 13, you don't know what the f*** you are. You're just an asshole.
And so at that point, were you interested in rap at that age?
Yeah, absolutely. I was never rapping until later on in life, but I knew all the music. I listened to all the music since I was 8 years old, you know, since a kid, nonstop. That was my thing.
And so how did it happen for you, though? How does one transition from being a chef, who's very good at his job, to becoming a rapper? Like, how did that happen?
It happened while I was just, you know, it was a hobby at first. And I started taking it a little bit more seriously as my friends were encouraging me. And usually, you know, your boys love to bust your balls, tell you you're garbage, this shit's trash, you should stop doing it. And it was the absolute opposite. So I figured I had something here and I was going to keep on doing it because I like doing it anyway.
How fast? Like, you go from doing this for your friends to being a professional in how long?
I would say I started rapping in 2009, 2008, just f***ing around. And then in 2010, I hadn't had the internet for years. Like, it wasn't on computers. I wasn't doing that type of shit. I didn't care. So one of my friends put it on the computer on YouTube on one of my clips. And it just started rolling. You know, one of these rap blogs put it up. And people just started taking notice. And I just started working harder. From there, you know, I broke my leg while I was working in the kitchen. And I was just like, fuck it, I'm done. I'm going, I'm following whatever I want to do. I'm following my heart. And I followed my heart. And here we are, you know, I started my first tour in 2010, 2011. But, you know, it hasn't been like a meteoric rise. It's been a slow burn.
That's pretty quick, man. That doesn't sound like a slow burn to go from I first started rapping in 2008 to 2010. You're popular, you know, sort of pre-social media or right at the advent of social media.
Yeah, it was right pre-social media. You know, like Twitter started around 2009. Someone told me about it. You know, like, stuff like that, like social media and the internet, pretty much helped me out with my career. I had no clue. I had no f***ing idea. I'm used to doing everything manually.
So you break your leg in the kitchen and you're thinking to yourself, beyond screw it, I'm going to go try this. You're thinking what? You're thinking I'm going to change careers?
Nah, what I was thinking was I had all kinds of bad thoughts in my mind. I thought, what the f*** am I going to do now? Da, 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 da. But after a while, I started changing my attitude and stopped being negative and becoming positive. And positive things start happening in your life. And that's pretty much what happened with me.
And so at the time, did you think the broken leg was a horrible thing?
Absolutely. But in hindsight, it was a f***ing blessing.
I mean, not just a blessing. Like, you couldn't have seen, right? You couldn't have foreseen any of your success, right? You're leaving the kitchen for the moment.
No,
you're leaving the kitchen.
I could not have seen this.
And you imagined what in your wildest dreams?
Just being the top chef, you know, like being Emerald, pretty much, you know, being Emerald. That's what I wanted to be. And I wanted to be on television, obviously, and I wanted to be a chef, but the food was more important. I never thought that being on TV and all this other stuff was reachable until social media, and then the fact that you could take a video and then edit it yourself and put it up there and get millions and millions of views and become a household name, seemingly overnight. But there's been a lot of hard work that goes into all this stuff. This didn't just happen for no reason.
Who did you want to be more, Emerald or Nas?
Shit. That's why I'm a unique character, because I'm part Nas, I'm part Emerald, and I'm part f***ing Don Mattingly, you know what I mean? So that's just where I'm just a unique character.
What are some of your favorite sports and wrestling sort of lyrics? Which ones do you like? The references that you're proudest of when you, I mean, and you're too young to go f***ing Don Mattingly on us, by the way. You're like 35 years old. How much of Don Mattingly's career did you even see?
I saw plenty of it. There's all kinds of videos. First of all, my grandfather was a New York Giants fan from the old Polo Grounds. He came here to New York City, Ellis Island, 1917. I'm deeply rooted in New York and New York sports and everything that comes with it. So, you know, going from watching the New York Giants, then moving away, then he'd watch the San Francisco Giants. I'd go to his house in West Palm Beach, Florida, Century Village, and he'd call f***ing people over to come and bring, like, baseball cards for me. Andre Dawson, I remember specifically laying on his floor looking at an Andre Dawson card. Like I said, I'm just a different type of guy. My favorite type of references are obscure ones. Like when I mentioned Old Polynes, like dudes' knees are like Old Polynes. They're on a downward swing. Their knees are like Old Polynes. You know, like just randomly shouting out Chuck Knoblauch. Things like that. Things like Oksana Bayul. You know, weird, obscure shit gets me.
I'm 50 years old, and the name
Earl Boykin.
No, but you're not going to do better than Olden Polynice. I believe later in life, he ended up impersonating a police officer and ended up in some horrible...
I know, trust me, I know. I remember that.
But that is a great comedian. Like, let's do this. I want to do this with you. What are the great sports names that have, because you got a lot of comedy in you and you have comedic timing. Olden Polynice, you're not going to do a lot better than Olden Polynice as a funny old reference. It just doesn't make any sense that you're 35 years old. That reference is more than 35 years old.
I know, but you know, there's a lot of old references I make to the World's Strongest Men also. I love World's Strongest Men competitions. Like Marius Pujanowski and the Jonas Savickas and Jean-Paul Stigmason and Magnus Vermagnuson and Yuka Hola. Like, I don't know. I'm not Stump the Schwab, but I got some f***ing weird knowledge that who even knows where it comes from.
You could probably hit us with something from your Benny Agbayani catalog, right? You got something there.
Oh, Benny Agbayani. Come on, man. Let's number 50.
How about wrestlers? You want to talk wrestling with me? Because I love talking wrestling. You love throwing the wrestlers into your lyrics.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like, I've been watching a lot of WWE Network, like the old WWF wrestling stuff, just refreshing my memory. Just, it was so ridiculous and amazing at the same time.
Let's reminisce. What did you like? Who were your favorites?
I'm from the era of, like, ECW. I used to go 13 years old to ECW events at the Elks Lodge on Queens Boulevard. You know, me and my boy were the only two young boys there going crazy. They had strippers. They had all kinds of crazy shit going on. You know, like Taz, Sandman, Sabu, RVD, shit like that. Like from the era of Razor Ramon and Diesel. And even before that, like Tito Santana, Rick D'Amato, you know?
Tito Santana, do you find yourself in the company of these people very often? Like, do you get starstruck around athletes and former wrestlers?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the only people I really get starstruck for. I was very starstruck when I met Ric Flair, but he was an amazing man. I met Mick Foley, Mankind. You know, like I've met a lot of these wrestlers. I've met a lot of famous sports people. I fanned out the biggest when I met Jeter. He's a New York City icon, legend, god. So when I met him, I had driving gloves in my pocket. I had a f***ing Carhartt shirt on. He made me feel like a man. He gave me a hug. He told me he loved me. He told me he f***ed with me. And that was all I ever needed in my life.
What would have been more exciting for you, meeting Derek Jeter or meeting Olden Polynice?
Olden Polynice, I would have just loved to have met him. Just to be in his presence, because it's like, I had his hoops card. It was terrible. You know, like I still have the basketball card where he's in like a, you know, sometimes they're in a cool position. His is like terrible. He's backing someone down in the post. Not even like good. It was like a bad positioning.
You don't get starstruck around anybody except athletes and wrestlers?
I got a little starstruck when I saw De Niro. When me and De Niro were acting in the same scene, I was pretty starstruck. But I had to do my job, so I had to keep it professional.
Did you have any memorable conversations with him about anything?
Absolutely.
And what can you share?
This is what he said to me. I was doing the scene. Martin Scorsese goes, okay, action. And then I do the scene. It's a walk and talk scene. And I don't, you know, walk and talks are pretty f***ing hard. You know, it's hard to just talk, period. I walk and talk. So I f*** up the scene a couple of times, and De Niro gets out of his wheelchair. He pulls me over to the side. He goes, come here, kid. I say, you're really f***ing blowing it. And I just looked at him. I was like, oh, shit, man, I'm really sorry. He goes, I get out of here, you f***ing asshole. I'm just f***ing with you.
He probably gets that all the time. People are probably nervous around him all the time. It couldn't have helped that he was watching you.
Yeah, no, it's a face-to-face. I'm acting with him. It's just me and him. I'm talking to Robert De Niro in my first scene pretty much ever. He was pretty mind-blown.
At any point during that, are you looking across from you and being like, what the f***? How did my life get here?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. There's been a lot of moments like that. Like, how the hell am I here right now? Like, what did I do to get this? It's just a beautiful thing. It's a blessing. It's all these things. Everything that people, all those f***ing things that people say, it's this. It's really a beautiful thing.
So give me some of the other stories, wherever it is that you want to put them, meeting chefs or performing somewhere, meeting musicians, partying with musicians.
Yeah.
Like, give me some of those stories.
Well, just, you know, I had this show that I was doing. It was called the Untitled Action Bronson Show. It was pretty much like a live, free-for-all variety show inside of a kitchen in the ilk of Emerald Live, but more stoned and cooler, you know, younger. So I've had all kinds of people come through, chefs that I couldn't even, like, Jacques Tartin, Daniel Ballou, people that are just mind-blowing chefs, you know what I mean? Like, you don't think that you'll ever be able to eat their type of food because they're rock stars of their world, you know? But one of my most memorable things was when Christopher Moltisanti, a.k.a. Michael Imperioli, came through for my birthday. And I just saw, I was like, Chrissy. I just kept calling him Chrissy. I'm sorry, Chris. I'm such a Sopranos fan, and he was just such a good dude. He came out for my birthday. His sons were big fans. I signed some books for him for the kids. He gave me a Buddhist prayer necklace and a gong that, you know, like the thing that you do gong baths with, the little gong, the Tibetan gong.
Yep.
So I was pretty blown away by that, how soft-spoken and spiritual the man was, the dude who plays Christopher Moltisanti.
Yeah, if you're a Sopranos fan, of course that's going to be. You probably have watched all of those. Have you found yourself smoking in the company of people where you're like, look at this, I can't believe this is happening right now?
I met Anthony Jr. in the street. He just gave me a big hug. I was like, what the f***, Anthony Jr.? I couldn't believe it was Anthony Jr. in the street. Like, yo. Also, I saw Macaulay Culkin after Summer Jam in Brooklyn sitting on the corner in one of those chairs that an elementary school has with bunny rabbit ears on. So that was pretty mind-blowing.
I imagine it would be. How about at festivals? Like, what's the crowd you've overlooked in the city or someone you're performing with or someone you're sharing a stage with at some point where you've been like, holy shit, this is the top of the mountain?
I mean, I've been on bills with f***ing Billy Idol. I've been on bills with, like, craziest musicians that's known to man. Like, I've been on tour with Eminem where I opened directly for Eminem in Johannesburg and in Cape Town. And in the hotel we were staying at was Carlos Santana. I'm eating breakfast watching Carlos Santana with his drippy hair and his beautiful tassels on that leather jacket. He's like my idol, man. You know, I couldn't even gather the balls to say what's up.
You got any good Eminem stories?
Oh, yeah. Eminem's the man. He took me to Africa. He took me to New Zealand, and he took me to Australia on tour with him. You know, he's a f***ing cool dude, you know? He's a cool dude. He's just a regular dude. He's just Michael Jackson-esque. He's like, don't even believe he's real. So, like, in London, when I met him for the first time, it was at this Leeds and Reading festival. We're standing in a circle. He has his back turned, and there's, like, this shining light on the middle of the circle. He just turns his head slightly, and the shine of the light just hits his features ever so gently. And then I knew it was him and he was real. I was like, holy shit, he's an actual person. Because growing up, you think he's not even a real person. So you couldn't even imagine being near with these type of people.
Well, who represents the most of that for you? Like, who among all the people in the music game? Is it Eminem or somebody else where you're like, that is not a real human being?
Carlos Santana. Carlos Santana. Because I've been so close to meeting him, you know, so many different times. Like, I actually know his bodyguard, his handler, and he's a good dude, a big fan. And he invited me to come meet him in Forest Hill Stadium in Queens. I got there a little late, and I only got to meet the son and the daughter.
No!
It's cool.
Action! No! But, no, you didn't get there on time for the drippy hair and the tassels on the jacket? Disrespect. Blasphemous.
I am known for being early and on time to everything in my life. I'm on chef time. I don't play games. I'm the most punctual rapper, person, everything. So the fact that I missed that was a travesty. But like I said, I watch Soul Sacrifice performance from Woodstock every day before I perform. I watch, you know, it's just like that's my spirit animal. That's my guy.
in what part of the world were you when you were performing and you looked over a sea of people and you were sort of amazed that, you know, this kid who comes from an American Jewish mother, an Albanian Muslim father, and was selling drugs in his youth, that you've arrived in this place and it moved you while on stage?
There's been a lot of those. Early on, it was at Coachella. When I first performed at Coachella, I think it was 2012 or 2013. And, you know, it was an early afternoon set, and I was with two of my other friends, one named Danny Brown and another group named Trash Talk. So it was like a three block of us. So we made it like a little tour date, and we just smashed it, and people were chasing me. I jumped off stage, and people were chasing me around the campground while I was rapping. It was surreal. But then you go all over the world, and it was like just recently, New Year's Eve, I was in New Zealand in Queenstown, which is one of the furthest places away from New York in the world. And 5,000-10,000 people just freaking out. And like, what is going on?
The lyricist that you most respected was?
My nemesis that I most respected.
Your lyricist. The lyricist, as you were growing up. Not a nemesis, although that's a good question, too. Would you prefer to answer that one?
Well, you know, I'm going to have to go with... I don't have any nemesis, per se, but I'm going to have to say my baseball team has a nemesis, and I respect the Red Sox.
Oh, wow. You have to give them respect? After all of these years, you have to give them respect?
No, I do respect them. I just do. They're a hard-nosed team, and they keep coming back with hard-nosed players. And I do respect him.
That hurt to say.
But a lyricist I most respected growing up has to be Nas, has to be Prodigy from Mobb Deep. It doesn't get better than that. Cool G Rap. It just doesn't get better when it comes to rapping thug words.
Can you give me a time where you've been surprised because someone, whoever it is really discerning about how good you are at writing?
I was at the 23rd anniversary Jordan party at Cipriani's on Wall Street. And I leave the party, and Michael Moore gets out of his limousine and comes up to me. He's like, oh, my God, I love your show. That's delicious. I was just watching it in the hotel room.
Of course, someone.
And I was like, Michael Moore, bro, bowling for Columbine, all kinds of crazy shit. Craziness.
Of course, if we were to take somebody, though, that was shaped that would love your food, it would look like Michael Moore, right? Something decadent and greasy and wonderful.
No doubt about it.
It's not
drooling over there watching the TV.
It's not surprising that he was watching a cooking show. I'm sorry, it got caught up in there. It got caught in your throat. What happened? Which one of the pieces? I've read that you have $20,000 and $30,000 marijuana pieces that you use, right? Are they bongs or are they something else?
Oh, my Lord. They're just pieces of art, you know, like a glass sculpture. It could be a f***ing bird. It could be a dragon. It could be any shape, you know. This just happens to be a functional, beautiful piece of glass art.
What do you have in front of you right now?
Right now, I'm at an incredible North African couscous restaurant called Kish Kash. I'm down over here in the lower Manhattan in the Tribeca area.
How often are you cooking these days? Do you cook for yourself as much as you can?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually here having a meeting about a collaboration.
Do you have a business mind as well?
I have a business mind, but it doesn't run deep. It's superficial business mind. They'll have an idea, yo, we should do this, but it doesn't go much further than that. I need help. I'm an artiste, you know. My brain is on another wavelength than numbers.
I'm curious, with that lack of acumen in that area, do you find a lot of people approaching you with an interest in taking your shit?
There's always someone that's interested in representing you or collaborating with you to grab the money that you could potentially make yourself. So, I mean, if it's lucrative for everybody and it makes sense, then there's no problem with that. But you can see through a bullshitter. You can't bullshit a bullshitter. My mother always told me that.
Well, in what ways were you shaped by your parents and specifically their heritages? Like, what has imprinted you from American Jewish and Albanian Muslim?
I'm sorry, Dan. I just heard a Turkish song that just came on in the restaurant, and I got hyped. Can you tell me exactly what you said again?
Yes, but what is the Turkish song in the restaurant?
Yeah, it's Barış Manço.
Wow. All right, you got some...
One of my favorite Turkish performers. He's like the legendary He's like Michael Jackson of Turkey. His name is Badish Manko.
And so now you're hype. Okay,
he has
nope.
Long black hair. He looks like Dracula. Well, I don't even know. What's the guy? Caligula? Who's the one with the soul patch and the long black hair?
I don't know.
He looks like Leonardo DiCaprio's father.
What are you talking about? What I asked you was your American Jewish mother, Albanian Muslim father. In what ways were you imprinted with those heritages?
Yes, you know, like there were times where I had 20 or 15 different Albanian people in the house with me and living in the house. And then there were times where I went down to West Palm Beach and stayed with my Jewish family. You know, like I would split time between both, but the Albanian side always overpowered because that's who I lived with. But my mother, it's like, they don't eat pork. Muslims don't eat pork, and my family didn't eat pork. When everyone would go bye-bye, my mother would order roast pork fried rice from the Chinese store and ribs. So we were conflicted from an early age.
And how does this work, though, when you say there are 15 Albanians in a house? How big is that house? What can you tell us about that time in your life?
Two-bedroom apartment, 1,000 square feet tops. Talking about my father had his whole family over here, you know, because he kept on in the 80s, he kept bringing people through Mexico and Canada and bringing family through. And, you know, that's the way we had to do it. And then when the war erupted out there and the ethnic cleansing went down, there was a lot of refugees that came around. So we were taking refugees, family members and all kinds of crazy shit. My grandfather would spit at the TV watching CNN.
Wow. What are the surprising things about 15 people living in 1,000 square feet? Like how, I mean, that couldn't have been very comfortable.
Well, the amount of cigarettes that are being smoked is phenomenal. It's at least, you know, they're smoking two cigarettes at a time.
And you're sleeping on the floor, right? Like what, I mean, 15 people
most
can't
most of the time, yeah, no, I didn't have I had a bed, but, you know, cousins slept. We would all sleep on the floor. Everyone would be sprawled out everywhere.
What's something that you know now that you didn't know 10 years ago?
Shit. That working class men have to pay a lot of goddamn taxes. When you work and you make money, you pay a lot of money to this government. I'd rather just sell trucks. I'd rather just do something that's illegal because this is crazy. They're just stealing my money.
That's it's the truth.
Stealing it from my grasp.
Shaquille O'Neal used to say he'd look at this check all the time and be like, I'm going to f*** up this FICA person. Who's this FICA person?
Hey, straight up. I mean, Shaq doesn't really have to worry about that type of thing, but imagine the taxes that Shaq had to pay. Goodness gracious.
When you're doing books, why are you doing books? Like, why, of all the things that you've tackled, have you decided to write, for example, the new book, and it's going to be available March 19th, Stone Beyond Belief?
That's right. Well, what I get out of the books is it's a journey. It takes a long time, you know, and it's like an art project. It's like a school project. You put it together throughout, you know, and then you present it. It's almost like a thesis type of thing. But I get to be creative in other ways that you can't really with words and telling stories and getting really deep into it and illustrating the stories and giving people little anecdotes and shaping the way that they could cook and pretty much bringing families together. Like so many people have told me that me and my mother cook everything out of your book. It's really brought us together. You know, we bonded heavily over this type of thing. And I'm aiming to make That's Delicious, the new Bible type of thing for the culinary world, for the young culinary world and the old guard as well, because you show respect to the old guard and as well as the new guys coming in. That's really where I'm at with it. I'm just trying to explore different avenues of creativity.
Of all the nice things that people say to you when they meet you, what are the compliments that you cherish the most? You were mentioning, you know, the idea of family coming together over your food. What are some of the compliments that you most cherish?
When someone has the wherewithal and notice to, like, notice how I treat people or how I talk to people and, you know, with a certain amount of respect and with eyes, you know, always give them respect, always give them your eyes. Because when you go abroad, take your eyes off somebody when you're saying hi to someone, it's over. You know, certain traditions in certain countries and places and cultures that, you know, you got to be serious about certain things. I just feel like my humanitarian effect is something that I like to be complimented on, because I'd never say no to anybody for a picture, for an autograph, or whatever. Want to just stop and talk about the Knicks, whatever, because who the f*** am I? I'm just another guy. Like, I'm honored that people want to talk to me and see me and show love.
That is a good attitude, and he wants to do serious stuff, but I'm going to read something here about your book. It is called The Ultimate Love Letter to the World's Most Magical Plant, Weed. Best-selling author, rapper, chef, and television star Action Bronson is a marijuana superhero, and Stone Beyond Belief is his masterpiece. This is an exploration of every corner of the pot galaxy, from highly scientific botanical analysis and the study of pot's medicinal benefits to a guide to the wild world of weed paraphernalia. It's also a very personal tribute to a substance Bronson refers to as life-changing, horizon-expanding, a conduit for happiness, a connector. Expound upon that. You, no, the plant has no bigger advocate than you, you prolific smoker. Can you expound upon those words?
Yes. You know, it's just a life-changing, like I said, life-changing effect. This is something that comes from Earth. This isn't meth. I'm sorry. Just to be frank, this isn't meth. This is not to be looked upon as a drug. This is looked upon to be medicine. This is looked upon to be, like I said, a relaxer, something that is integrated in life, not something that's like overbearing or something to be looked at as taboo or illegal. It's helped people throughout the world's history with so many different things. I don't want to start getting heady, but it definitely came from the sky, from another planet, given to us in some other way. And it was given to us for a reason. There's a reason why cancer is killed with these types of things and all types of diseases, and shit could be prevented with main essential makeup of these plants, you know?
You're saying they come from aliens, though? Like, you think it comes from a different place?
Well, what is an alien? We might be f***ing aliens. This is another conversation to have. What I'm saying is, we don't know where it came from. It was just presented to us, and we need to respect it and, you know, enjoy its beauty, not to look down upon it. You know, just because, you know, the world and America, they say it's a drug problem, it's da-da-da-da, it's because, you know, they make it that way. Don't make it so hard to obtain that you don't have to arrest people. I don't have to shove it in my nuts to hide it, and I don't have to worry about driving around with it. Make it like it's a normal thing. And I think more people will become enchanted.
When are you having to shove it into your nuts when traveling?
Yeah, you have to shove it into your nutsack area because you have to hide it. And no one wants to go down there. If the cops come, they're not going into your nuts. It's just, they usually don't want to go there. I always tell a cop I'm not wearing underwear.
That's good. That's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
That's a good way to do it. How have you seen many things that the stigma has fallen on, though, more than marijuana over the last 10 or 15 years? Because I believe that now you're espousing what's a much more popular opinion than it was, not, you know, as recently as even 5 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the only thing that I can speak of, because that's the only type of quote-unquote substance that I use. I don't use any other, I don't take pills, I don't take any of that type of shit. I'm allergic to fucking codeine. In my wildest dreams, I wouldn't shoot dope. I've shot steroids many times, but that's intramuscular. It's not going into the vein. Once you start talking about putting a needle in a vein, I get queasy. But I can shoot it directly in my ass cheek very easily. So you tell me what's going on.
I didn't know you were a steroid user.
I was a steroid abuser when I was like 23.
Really?
Yes.
Tell me about that time.
23, 24. I was trying to gain confidence. I was trying to lose weight and get buff. My whole life has been about trying to get buff. Since 13 years old, I've been working out Mount Olympus Gym on Northern Boulevard. I remember seeing this one Asian dude. He was huge, but he had acne all over his back. I just couldn't understand what the hell that was. But I still wanted to be that big. And then, you know, years go by. I've started doing powerlifting at Lost Battalion on Queens Boulevard. Stunted my growth. I'm a short piece of shit because of it. But I could lift a lot of weight.
Did you want to be a bodybuilder at that time?
That means anything to anybody. No, I wanted to be. I liked more of a power lifter body. I don't know why. The gut was always more relatable for me.
I imagine that you got a great deal of confidence from these things where there was success. But what were you like around women as a youngster? Were you someone who had some success, or did that come with music and cooking and confidence?
No, I had success with women early on because they always thought I was cute. And, you know, and I learned how to cook because of that. And that was really that. But it wasn't like I was a Casanova. You know, there's no doubt about that. Later on, with obviously being in the realm of music and that type of stuff, you become more of a exploratory sexual person because it's more readily available and there's more people, that more women that are just, you know, I don't know. It sucks that's how it has to go down, but you know, it's life. What are you gonna do? Take it how you get it.
What came with success that you weren't expecting?
The constant battle inside of my mind of trying to keep on going, you know, not wanting to ever stop.
Not wanting to get satisfied, you mean?
Yeah, not wanting to get satisfied, but never wanting people to stop caring about me and, you know, stuff like that. It's, you know, it's mind games. You play with yourself.
Oh, you mean you're
become successful, and then you can think the next day it's over. Can you see how many careers are one day and then over in the next? I've been here for almost 10 years now, so I'm trying to be forever. I just want people to care forever, and if they don't, I'll still be me. But those are the types of things you struggle with in your mind.
What do you consider unusual about your journey? Because I've said before that it's just a crazy story, and everyone knows it's a crazy story. But what do you consider craziest about it?
Now that I sit back and I look back, it happened the way it should have. I'm a wild and unique, crazy guy, and there's no way that my path would have been normal. So the way that everything worked out is the way it was supposed to.
We're going to let you go on that note. I appreciate you giving us so much time. Again, the book is called Stone Beyond Belief. It's available March 19th, and if you want tickets or information on the White Bronco Tour, you visit actionbronson.com. I haven't seen you since Espanol Away, and you just ran over and
That's
hugged
right.
me. I was startled
That's
by it
right.
because I was not expecting that, but you are like maximum sports dork. You have not lost any of
bro,
that.
Come on, you're my guy, bro. I watch you and Papa all the time. You remember I was on the show?
I do remember you were on the show, but that was at the very beginning, it felt like, right? That was about six
yep.
or 7 years ago. You were just coming up.
Exactly. And you guys, you know, you were gracious enough to have me on, you and Vermani, and it was just a beautiful thing.
Well, thank you for doing this. I know you're very busy. Congratulations on your success. It's fun to watch.
Thank you, Dan. Much love, my bro. Be good.
Our thanks to Action Bronson. We again remind you guys to rate and subscribe and review on this stuff so we can keep bringing it to you. Next week, we bring you a real interesting conversation with Dan Patrick. So good, we might have to make it two podcasts.